Mail call!
It's a Mailbag Monday with the Killer Bees.
You've got mail.
Another Mailbag Monday on a Tuesday, 713-780-3776. Your questions for the Bees, 713-780-3776. Texture, I heard this morning on the radio that Pena's missing 2 months. Is this true? I find myself livid when I heard that. WebMD, when I Googled how long does it take for an MLB baseball player to return from a hairline fracture in his rib, says 4 to 8 weeks. Dana Brown thinks it could be 10 days. So anywhere from 10 days to 8 weeks, somewhere in that range is what we're looking at for Jeremy Pena.
Yeah, I think it's a fluid situation is the best way to sum that one up, because it seems like the organization is hoping and thinking that it might be much sooner, but yeah, it could be 2 months.
Yeah, I mean, we don't
look at Kyle Tucker.
The Astros are optimistic about it, but the Astros also on Friday after the game said there's no break. The Astros also were optimistic about Yordan Alvarez. The Astros were also so optimistic with Kyle Tucker that they didn't place him on the injured list for like 3 days because they thought he could be back in 10 days, and then it turned into 3 months. So I don't know that I'm going to be a buyer on Dana Brown's optimism. Sorry.
Agreed. Yeah, just, you know what? You can burn me a couple times. I'm not falling for it anymore. He's back when he's back. Hopefully he's not back till he's 100%, and hopefully that's sooner rather than not later. How about that?
Yeah, same. And I appreciate that Dana's optimistic, but we have to factor it into the equation when Dana Brown is talking about returns to play, that he always errs on the side of optimism, and a lot of times that optimism can miss by 2.5 months. 713-780-3776, your question for the Bees. Go ahead and laugh, but Popeye's dirty rice is insanely good, Ken in Galveston. Yeah, I'm not going to laugh at that. I'm a Popeye's stan. I like Popeye's.
I like dirty rice, too.
Dirty rice is good?
Yeah.
Frenchie's has good dirty rice.
Papado's has really good dirty rice.
Okay. Bougie?
I'm just
saying. We're going from Popeye's.
I'm talking about just quality. Like, of all dirty rice, I think that Papado's has really good dirty rice.
You went from a $10 meal to a $25, $30 meal.
I don't think I would order dirty rice at a fast food place.
Popeye. The good fried chicken places have good dirty rice, I've learned. Or people from Louisiana have good dirty rice, I've learned. They can make a boot taste good, the people in Louisiana. What's the most money you guys have spent on fireworks for a holiday? Go Cougs. Go Cougs.
Top Dog fireworks. Probably $100-$150.
Mine's probably like $25. I'm not a huge fan of the firework. I like fireworks. I don't like spending tons of money on fireworks and then going to put them on fire, like light them on fire. Because whenever I light that firework, I think to myself, this firework cost me X amount of money, and by the end of the 15 minutes, I'm like, I literally just lit $50 on fire.
I don't like that. About Jason Pierre-Paul.
No, it's the money aspect for me.
This was before I had any kind of dogs, too, because it freaks the heck out of the dogs. But when I was younger, in our neighborhood, everybody would chip in $100-$150, and then
that's cool.
You know, one guy would go get a whole ton of fireworks and be like the master lighter, and then everybody had fun.
That's a good way to do it. I just don't like burning my money on fire. Like it's 15 minutes. Now the kids like it, so I'll compromise. We'll get some, but we're not getting a ton.
Did you take the kids to go see fireworks somewhere?
So, I'm trying to say this without giving away my location, because we already have one stalker that knows exactly where I live on the internet.
You got a couple more, and they don't even know.
That's true. There used to be a guy in our neighborhood that would do an unbelievable fireworks show every July 4th. Unbelievable. Like, it would rival small cities is how good it was. It was unbelievable. There has since been a neighbor of his, or her, I don't know, I've never met these people, that have, like, difficult to be, like, around and difficult to, like, you know, be neighbors with. Uh-huh. And they're not doing it anymore because of that neighbor.
Wow.
So, like, this is the first July 4th where we haven't had the luxury of literally watching it from our house. So, I don't know. I don't know what we're going to do.
Yeah, normally the girls, I'll take the girls, or we'll take the girls. And the dogs, of course, Lisa's always concerned about the dogs. But we take them somewhere where we can get, like, in and out quickly and still see all of them. It's not like you want to be up that far. I just hate the fact that you can get stuck in traffic for hours.
Yeah, we don't. I hate crowds. Like, I hate crowds. It annoys me. Yeah, I'm not patient. It annoys me. Key from LA, you could choose to add another professional team in the city of Houston. What would it be? Baseball, basketball, or football? That's interesting.
Ooh, wow.
I think for the content, I would go football.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Double football would be a really, really neat experience because you would think at least one of the two teams, unless you're in New York, one of the two teams would be good, and there'd be plenty of content at all times. There'd be plenty of interesting stories between two football teams for a majority of the year.
Yeah, give me two football.
Yeah, I think I'd be with two football, not only for the reason you guys mentioned, but, and this is going to sound like I'm crapping on the other two sports, but I think from the long-term sustainability, I don't know if kind of the fair weather nature, like when the teams like the Rockets and the Astros are bad, could sustain two teams like we could in football.
It's probably true.
Yeah, I think in a city like this, you're right. I think as much as we've had a great run of baseball to get everybody to kind of start talking about being a baseball city, but yeah, I think that overall, this city will go right back to football in a heartbeat as soon as the team start a little bit on the downside.
Branham's like an old man. You're right. I am. I'm very much an old man. I'm a millennial who identifies as a boomer, no doubt about it. Also, Brian just called the Houston fan base Fairweather. That was Brian that said that. Brian called all of you Fanweather fans.
Boarding race here, but it's true.
Not Blankers. That was Brian who called all of you Fairweather fans. Rack and Pete have a feeling rib fractures heal faster than hand fractures. Hopefully. Hopefully that's the case. Do you have a favorite song from one of your kids' shows?
No. I know that the old Mickey Mouse Clubhouse song would rattle around in my head forever because they watched it so much.
Yeah, Brandon Baby loves Mickey Mouse Clubhouse. Yeah. Mickey, I forget how it goes, though. That one was pretty good. I don't like any of the Miss Rachel stuff. We haven't watched as much Miss Rachel lately. Handyman Hal is kind of creepy. He's kind of a creepy dude. But he's like, great. The kids love it.
Bluey. The intro to Bluey.
Bluey's pretty good. Yep. My Brandon baby's been watching this Spider-Man show. We're like, there's Spider, like he's a kid Spider-Man, like a 3, 4, 5 year old Spider-Man, yeah. And he's got like two friends.
Yep. Yeah, my daughter's watched that.
That one's pretty good.
Yep,
like that one's not awful. The other ones, Miss Rachel always sing that. What was the one that the Nationals would sing nonstop?
Baby Shark.
Baby Shark drives me.
Oh my
nuts.
God! And then when we played the Nationals in the World Series,
yes,
that whoever that was for the Nationals was his walk up song, and the fans went nuts. And then they played it during the seventh inning. Ugh,
that's why I hate it. Branham read the newspaper as a kid. I did. That's how I learned how to read. Barney. My kids haven't gotten into Barney.
Mine either. It was Peppa Pig for a little bit. Mickey Mouse Clubhouse was a staple.
Yeah, same.
Now it's Blue. And then the other thing, I think I told you guys this the other day, but Big City Green.
Never heard of that one.
Yeah, I haven't heard of it.
Big City Green is like...
What is it on?
They watch it on one of the kids' channels, I don't know if it's the Disney Channel or whatever, but it's essentially like this backwoods farm family that gets... like planted right in the middle of a big city.
Oh.
And my kids just love watching.
Haven't seen it. It's Spidey and his amazing friends.
Yeah, my kids watch that.
Yeah, that one's pretty good. Of all the ones that he watches, that one's probably the best. He watches Mickey Mouse Racers.
I've seen that too.
That one's not bad. Yep. It's like Mickey Mouse Clubhouse, but they're like racing all the time. He loves cars. He loves speed, race, Buzz Lightning. He likes Lightning McQueen. Yeah, that's it.
Mickey Mouse Clubhouse.
It's fun inside. Come inside. It's fun inside.
Come inside. It's fun inside.
Of the two football teams, you can have a 12 and a 3 p.m. game. That'd be so cool. That's easily football. I wouldn't want to watch. I mean, I would. But could you imagine 162 games times two, and they're usually in the same window of time when they're starting?
Yeah, so we'd be going back and forth. No. You'd have to watch both teams at the same time.
Baseball would be last.
It would be tough.
You would have to watch 350 games.
Even
at the same time.
Even 82 mostly. NBA games time, too, would be really
NBA
tough.
Wouldn't be as bad because maybe you don't catch them on the same night. Like, maybe you have it. Like, most of the time it would.
Yes.
But it wouldn't be as bad as baseball at the same time. The conflicts would be less.
Think about with baseball. You're watching roughly, on average, 6 hours of baseball per day, 6 days a week.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah.
That's
even
a lot.
Even on a quicker game, we're talking 5 hours a day.
I'd be complaining about two managers' lineups on the same day. I can't handle that.
No,
even I would be annoyed at that. What's your favorite fish to eat?
Cod.
Really? Yeah. Cod.
I don't like fishy fish. I told you guys this. Like, I mean, it does. Are you talking about fish or just like shellfish? Like
fish.
What's y'all's favorite fish to eat?
Fish.
So if it's just fish, cod, because I don't like fishy fish. I don't like salmon.
Heard somebody say cod.
I don't like salmon. I don't like catfish. I don't like.
I would go with catfish.
Oh,
I like
catfish
cod.
Might be worse than cod. I like fish. I'm a fish eater. I like salmon probably the most, but I like my salmon raw. I prefer my salmon raw as opposed to cooked. But you get some other ones. You get like a little bit of ling, which has got a little sweet flavor. That's not bad.
You can go like a little trout snapper. Redfish.
Snapper. A little snapper.
Yeah.
Redfish is good. What's the Texas trio? It's flounder, snapper. No, the Texas trio. It's like a fishing thing.
Is it redfish?
The Texas trio. Yeah, I used to know this. It's a redfish, a flounder. What's the third?
Catfish.
Why am I? No, it's not catfish. This is saltwater.
Oh.
This is out in the Gulf. What is the Texas trio? Why isn't Google knowing this? What is the Texas trio? All these people are probably texting right now.
Yeah, someone said Remy, flounder.
Speckled trout, redfish, and flounder. I missed the trout. The trout.
Someone tweeted in.
Redfish, flounder, and the speckled trout. Those are good eating.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Those are good plenty eating. Of them.
I don't like catfish much.
You don't?
No, it's kind of.
I don't either.
I mean, I'll eat it, but it's meh. How do you feel about mahi mahi?
Eh.
Mahi mahi's
mahi
mahi's
right. Pretty good.
Mahi mahi's not that fishy.
No, it's more like.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not that fishy. It's a little white fish.
Yep.
Texas slam, redfish, speckled trout, flounder. Yep. Right on the tip of my tongue. I missed the trout. I'm going to go try to catch. I'm going to go to Colorado here in a couple weeks. I'm going to try to fish for a little trout.
Have you ever tried fly fishing?
No. I fished in the rivers in Colorado, but I didn't do fly fishing. I just did normal fishing.
We went to Colorado as a kid, and we took fly fishing lessons. It was, I mean, it's really difficult, but it was a lot of fun.
Some of the parents from our softball team got in the truck, drove to Colorado, and are fly fishing for a week. They said it's awesome there.
I've always heard that fly fishing is not as productive, and it's harder.
Yes.
So there is like an art to the casting and all that.
More effort, less fish.
So not as practical, which I want to catch. I don't want to fish, you know? So I'm going to do some catching.
Yeah, I think you got to be more into the artwork if you want to fly fish.
Which I'm really not. I'm in for the thrill of having a fish on the line.
That is
sure.
Cool.
That's fair.
That's what I prefer. All
you
right,
ever done the offshore fishing?
Yeah, a couple times.
Man. We did it in Mexico a couple times, and that'll wear you out.
They're behemoths. I mean, you. Ooh. I mean, it's not rare to have an hour-long fight with
exactly.
Fish. Yeah, I think the first time I went was with Uncle Jack. My dad was out there.
We went for a couple, two different weddings. Two of my buddies that got married, we're getting married there, and we went. And my goodness, we caught a ton, but it wore your ass out.
The last time that I, it does, it's very tiring. The last time that I went out, I slept for like 2 hours, woke up at like 5 a.m., and I had a Red Bull.
Oof.
I've never had a Red Bull again in my life.
There was a lot of throwing, yeah, because we were all out the night before. There was a lot of throwing up on our excursion offshore fishing.
Shark marinated in orange juice then grilled is amazing. I've had shark. Shark's not bad. It's kind of tough. You gotta really know how to season that bad boy.
Marinated
for it to be
good. In orange juice?
I could see that. The citrusy kind of cutting down on the toughness.
Yeah, like, the acid would break it down.
What they say?
That's what you do on skirt steak. You put it in citrus so it cuts down on the toughness of
but
it.
They also say you can soak like beef in Coca-Cola. It's supposed to.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, it's the acid that breaks it down. Tenderizes it.
Yeah.
Texas Slam. Texas Trio. I'm disappointed in myself that I forgot the speckled trout. Oh, I'll get over it. All right. Astros all golden era team. Why are you talking about this? Well, you had two pillars in town recently, right? You had Ryan Pressly, who is the closer on the golden era, and you had Kyle Tucker, who is the right fielder in the golden era. Who else is on the all golden era team? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. We're just talking about putting a line in the water. You know where you can put a line in the water? At Two Creeks Crossing Resort. Their two creeks are fantastic fishing. They also have a catch and release pond, too, if you want to teach the kiddos, the youngsters, how to do a little fishing. Escape the rat race. Get rid of the hustle and bustle, whatever's causing you stress and anxiety, and get out to Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. Escape the city. Enjoy the relaxing great outdoors. Book that stay right now at twocreekscrossingresort.com. We were out there a few weeks ago, had a fantastic time. The wilderness. You get a bunch of trees, too, so you kind of can escape the heat a little bit. Saw a bunch of the animals you just don't see in the city. It was a great time. We're going to be heading back out there soon. I worked that Friday. I was up there before the sun went down. It's just 90 minutes from Houston. You can escape the city without traveling too far at Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston, which is great if you have kids, because traveling with kids is annoying. It's no fun. We all know that, whether it's playing, whether it's driving for 14 hours. Open green spaces, wildlife, beautiful, majestic trees, and some of the best fishing in Texas. You can't beat it. You can also hike on their 92-acre property, do some kayaking, play some pickleball. They have courts there just for you. Or you can just hang out by the pool with a drink. Get away. Really rest and relax. And Two Creeks Crossing Resort's always taking care of their visitors. They'll do whatever to take care of their visitors. They had a food truck out both nights that we were there. They had some live music on Saturday as well. We stayed in the treehouse. Kids still talk about the treehouse. The treehouse was awesome. You can reserve the treehouse. You can also glamp. Glamping's always fun. They have beautiful cabins. Or you can pull up the RV. They have RV spaces. They have the perfect stay for everybody. And incredible savings are in store right now. You booked 5 nights through the end of July, and you're going to save 35% on your stay. So book that stay now, twocreekscrossingresort.com. That's twocreekscrossingresort.com.
75. You found the Killer Bees live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Brannan.
Brian Presley, Kyle Tucker, they were in town and inspired me to create Branham's all-golden era team, which I think the first question you have to ask, when did the golden era begin? Okay, what's your answer, Brian?
I was 2017.
Okay, see, I polled the audience because I wanted to get a grasp of how the city felt. The majority was 2015. There was also some, like, weird ones. Like, it started the day they called up Carlos Correa. It started the day that Julia Morales ate crickets in Seattle. What?
That is a weird one.
I go 2015. Like, that's when you started to see it opening. That's when you started this era. This is, like, because, I mean, a lot of the main characters in 15 were still the main characters in 17 when you won your first World Series title. So I lean 15 as well. I do think it is a fair conversation to have. I wouldn't say 2017 is wrong. I just lean 15. So leaning 15, my golden era Astro roster. And I built a 26-man roster because that's the rules. You have a 26-man roster currently. You can only have 13 pitchers. You can only have 13 hitters. Now, I tried to be fair, too. Like, I didn't want 13 starting pitchers. So I tried really hard to keep pitchers in their role. Like, if you're a reliever, now, I did make one notable exception. And that notable exception was with Hunter Brown. I wanted Hunter Brown on my team so bad that I moved him to the bullpen. Ooh. So that's the one time that I cheated. I got one cheat. And I did have a six-man rotation, so that could be kind of cheating too. So my six-man rotation, Verlander, Fromber, Garrett Cole, Dallas Keuchel, Lance McCullers, Christian Javier. Six-man starting rotation. You want to interject there? You want me to say the bullpen?
Just go ahead.
All right, my bullpen's Josh Hader, Hunter Brown. This is reverse order, by the way. Okay. Josh Hader, Hunter Brown, Brad Peacock, Colin McHugh, Will Harris, who took a lot of grief that I had him on here. Brian Abreu's my setup, and Ryan Presley's my closer. Any objections to my pitching staff?
You got Hader and...
Hader, I made Hader my last reliever on the roster.
Yeah, but you wouldn't have him further back in the bullpen.
He's only been here a year and a half, and he wasn't that good last year.
But remember, you had the argument that he wasn't that good, but he was actually statistically pretty damn good.
I don't remember that.
Pretty good. You were the one defending him when I was crapping.
I liked him. I thought he was pitching better than his stats, but his stats weren't good.
No.
His stats weren't good. No, I mean, also, like, I did go volume. I did go resume. Like, I went more resume than, like, their prowess. Like, that's why Hunter Brown's in my bullpen and not my starting rotation.
Now, did you have Colin McHugh in there?
Colin McHugh's in my bullpen.
Yeah.
Like, he split time between but he was enough of a reliever.
I loved him for a couple of years. He and Peacock both were those guys for a couple of years that whenever they went to him, they were pretty damn solid and they could give you multiple innings. So I don't think there's many problems with that.
The reaction that was negative, it was a great reaction, but the pushback that I saw the most was that I should have had Hunter Brown in the starting rotation, which I couldn't bump Javier McCullers. Like, do I think Brown's greatness is better than those guys' greatness? Probably. Like, he probably has a higher peak than those guys, although Javier did throw a no-hitter in the World Series. But I went volume over the peak. Now, I think Hunter Brown could easily jump him. And look, Hunter Brown's still on this team. I also took some grief for not including Charlie Morton.
Ooh, what? Charlie F. and Morton. Probably.
Who you bumping? You bumping Javier from Morton?
See, I think the tough situation is two guys are kind of joined at the hip in terms of the run, and the they will live in infamy for the Astros playoff run with Charlie F. and Morton and McCullers.
Yeah,
McCullers and his curveballs and what Charlie Morton did. I think both those guys are like joined at the hip, yeah. So it's tough to have one without the other.
I hear you, but I can't bump Morton single Charlie Morton. I can't bump McCullers or Javier for him.
Now Cole was here for how many postseasons?
He was here for two.
So that's a shorter run too. But he was dominant. He was
unbelievable.
Dominant. Yes.
Unbelievable in those 2 years.
Yeah, I don't know that. Yeah, I don't think you can argue that.
Morton just missed the cut, and I can't jump anybody. I can't jump Morton.
Keuchel had
anybody.
A Cy Young, but Keuchel would be the one guy where you
Keuchel
go.
Was here for a while though.
Yeah,
Keuchel was here for 15 for a minute.
21.
I can't remember his last year. I think his last year was 18, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, you might be right. Yeah, yeah. And he was actually here before 15.
I don't think
he was
on the.
He wasn't on the second one.
I don't think he was on the 19 pitching staff.
I think you're right.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So that's my pitching staff. I did struggle at catcher. I'll admit, I struggled at catcher. But I went Yiner Diaz as my starter. Just the volume, the offense. Went Yiner. My backup took some grief for this. Martin Maldonado. A little more volume, a little bit longer. You know, Brian McCann. Brian McCann was only here for 2 years. The second year, he only played 60 games, and it was very mediocre.
Generous. I think he was below mediocre the second year.
Robinson. How'd you say Robinson's last name? Chirinos or whatever?
Chirinos.
He had a good year while he was here. I was surprised by the year that he had while he was here. You could, like, maybe throw Evan Gattis there, but I never viewed Evan Gattis as a catcher.
You didn't want him catching.
I never viewed him as a catcher, even though he had that 1 year where he was your primary backup catcher. I was terrified when he caught.
Yeah,
so
he
I went Yiner, Martin Maldonado as my catchers. Around the horn, I think, is simple. I don't think there's any argument around the horn. Yuli at first, Altuve at second, Bregman at third, Correa at short. Yep. And then your outfield, I don't think there's any argument. Brantley in left, Springer in center, Tucker in right, Jordan's your DH. Now, the bench could come into play. My outfield bench bat, was Mariznick. Well, how could you keep Mariznick over Reddick or Rasmus or whatever? I need a backup center fielder, man. So Jake Mariznick gets the nod there. A lot of people are arguing that it should have been Jake Myers, not Jake Mariznick. I'm not there yet. Myers could get there by the end of the year. He might get there by the time his career. Well, I mean, Mariznick was pretty good when they were.
I just think Mariznick
wasn't bad.
As much as I've always been kind of sour on Jake's offense, Jake over Jake, I would say. I would take Myers.
I do think that Jake Myers is a better hitter than Mariznick. But Mariznick, when they were. Had some pretty good years. And then my two backup infielders, Pena and Marwin Gonzalez. So that's my all golden era.
Yeah, Pena had to be on the roster somewhere when you win the two MVPs in the playoffs. I think he's got to be somewhere on that roster. Marwin, yeah, everybody can talk about that. He was huge. I mean, the Dodgers World Series alone and the home run off of Kenley Jansen.
That was big time.
That's another one of those moments that's going to live forever in Astros lore.
People were arguing, not a lot, but there was some argument that Mauricio Dubon should have been there instead of Marwin.
Don't like that.
Hey, I don't either. You have Brantley?
Brantley's my starting left fielder. I was surprised with how little production you've had in left field in the Golden Era.
It wasn't a hard choice because of that exact
reason.
There's
very little production. Like, it's Brantley and then, like, Marwin, surprisingly.
Yeah.
Like, there hadn't been a whole lot of left field production in the Golden Era. Like, even Brantley, there are, like, playoff heroics and stuff. Even Brantley, when you look at, like, the resume of him in Houston, I don't know if I want to say it.
You about to?
I don't know if I want to say it.
Uncle Mike.
I don't want to say that Brantley's overrated because I'll get crushed.
You thought he underachieved in the
postseason? No. I think people would be surprised by Brantley's Astro resume based on how we think of Michael Brantley the player. Like, we think of Michael Brantley as like an 8. Like, on a scale of 1 to 10, we think Brantley. And a lot of this is because of the playoffs, and that's deservingly so. That's why I don't think he was overrated. I think it was more injuries than anything. Like, it wasn't lack of production. It was because he was hurt a lot. How we view Brantley, like, in an 8 on a scale of 1 to 10, if you just pull up his numbers as an Astro, it's probably more like a 6, 6.5.
Is it primarily because of missed time?
It's like Jordan on a smaller scale.
Is it production-wise, though? Is it because
he
always hit for average?
No,
he always had
some
pop.
It was injury-related. Okay. Like, he didn't play a ton of games
in
Houston,
games played. Okay.
Yeah, he didn't play a ton of games as an Astro.
Yeah, because he is put on a pedestal. here.
Yes, and like, again, playoff heroics. He had huge moments. The dude could hit. Whenever he was on the field, he was awesome. That's why I wouldn't say overrated. Yeah,
the big defensive play.
I think that if we all took a deep dive in Michael Brantley's numbers in Houston, we'd be like, oh, okay, it's not as good as I thought. Not as good as, but that's because of injuries.
It wasn't because I think to you guys' point, too, you don't have a lot of other choices that you would throw in there and go, oh,
that
would be a competition for Uncle Mike.
No, I mean, I think the second best left fielder is probably Marwin. Probably that's Marwin, because Reddick was a right fielder. Rasmus played center right. He probably played a few games in left, but not a ton. I can't think of another decent left fielder. Yeah,
Colby Jack had just basically a short dose of...
He was better than you.
He had a lot of pop for at least 1 year.
But he played a lot of right.
Yeah.
He didn't really play left. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Where did I go wrong? Brian has one, too. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. Get to the reaction real quick on this list. Get to Brian's. 2015, says a texter. They lost to the Royals, who won the World Series. I still have terrible memories of that. Tony Sipp deflecting that ball that bounced to Correa. They probably should have handled. Correa was 4-for-4 in that game with a couple of bombs, though. They could have. I mean, they win that game there. Who knows what? Maybe you have another one in 15. Could have easily won that series.
That was one that I, again, because and it just was insult to injury because the Royals ended up winning it. But I thought they should have beaten the Royals, and I thought that they had a chance to go and at least get there.
Give me Hunter Brown over McCullers. See, I can't really argue it a whole lot. McCullers has done more. Hunter Brown's probably done it better. Was Charlie Morton considered? Yeah, Morton was considered. He was. He was probably my second starting pitcher that was cut. I would have Brown ahead of Morton, but I met Brown in my bullpen. So Morton, you could make the case, was my first starter that I left out. Thank you for adding Brad Peacock. Most people have forgotten him. You're welcome. You're welcome for adding Brad Peacock. Anytime. Grinke, I'd actually have Grinke behind Morton, probably Urquidy. I took some heat for not having Urquidy, too, because he does have two World Series wins.
I don't know if Grinke would even make, like, if we were making starting pitchers, like, top eight, top nine, like, looking at his numbers, they're pretty mediocre.
Yeah, he might make the JV rotation.
And
yeah,
people maybe will always hang their hat on the World Series game.
Yeah, I mean, I loved Grinke, but
he was great
the body
seven,
of work
but
just wasn't as good as all. No Mike Fiers, you can delete your account, not text us anymore. I got to have the Hank Bott as backup catcher. No, I'm going to put Hank Cogger as my first base coach. He can be over there in the first base coach doing the Hank Bott. That's where he belongs. Springer is my center fielder. Texter Pena over Carlos Correa. Wow. I had Correa as my shortstop. Pena was my backup infielder. Tyler and Conroe, it's okay to say we have romanticized Brantley's production. I think it's a good way of saying it. Didn't Tony Kemp and Nori Aoki play left field? You prove my point. All right, Brian, what you got?
A lot of mine is similar to you. I'll start with the lineup instead of the pitchers, but I don't think there's any argument as you laid out. My catcher's Yiner, then first base Yuli, second base Altuve, third base Bregy, shortstop Correa, outfield Brantley left, Springer in center, right field Tucker, and the DH is Yordan. My reserves, I think we differed on one of these, but I've got my reserve catcher as Maldi. I have Reddick in the outfield. Pena is a backup infielder. And then Marwin, who can play basically everywhere but catcher.
We disagreed on Reddick.
Sorry?
We disagreed on Reddick. Riznik. So who's playing center field when Springer inevitably gets hurt?
I hope Marwin can, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, Marwin, I think he literally played everywhere but pitcher
and
catcher that year. Yeah, I mean, he would obviously be a drop defensively, but I think I could live with that because of the offense and the pitching. I, too, win a six-man starting rotation, JV, Cole, Keuchel, Fromber, LMJ, and Hunter Brown. And then relief pitchers, I think we only disagreed on one, but Hayter, Presley, Abreu is my high-leverage guys, then Colin McHugh, Will Harris, Brad Peacock, and Charlie Morton as a long guy and kind of taking on the role he did in 2017 in the playoffs.
We're kind of unanimous.
Who did you take out of the starting
close?
Did you not have Javier?
No, I did. Yeah, we differ. We differ on Reddick as a Reddick or Mariznick as a reserve. And yeah, I didn't have Javier. I had instead had Charlie Morton.
You went Morton over Javier?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, your head,
man. Morton doesn't have the heroics of Javier.
Javier had the, I mean, it's basically one season. I know his one season was amazing. Yeah.
Javier was clutch in the postseason until that last start.
So was Charlie Morton.
Charlie Morton was
too. No, Morton won great in the postseason.
Morton, I mean, he closed out game seven.
His postseason RA is north of four. I was surprised when I saw that.
Okay, maybe I'm mostly remembering 2017. Maybe it was brought down by other years. But
that's where everybody's going to go. There's going to be a play or an outing or a start where everybody's just going to go, that guy.
Man, it's interesting that you have Morton over over Javier.
Yeah, just,
I'm on to you.
I feel, I guess, safer with Morton out there. Javier felt more volatile.
I wonder why you feel safer with Morton.
Is that because
what are you trying to imply?
Is that because of what has come of him since then?
I think that, yeah, I think that's probably partly what it is. Mm-hmm. I'm shaded by how he fell off after that.
I could see that.
Who fell off?
Javier.
Yeah, he was hurt.
He fell off before the injury.
Y'all forgot about Phil Maton. We purposely broke his hand for the Astros to win the World Series. He punched to the locker when he gave up a hit to his brother.
Yep. And then he got left off the playoff roster.
I did notice how good Ken Giles' numbers were in 2017.
They weren't good.
His ERA was like
He also fell apart that year. Like they didn't trust him in the playoffs.
Look, I didn't include him. I'm just saying when I saw his ERA, I believe was sub 250, I was like, eh. If I put him on here, I'm going to feel bad about myself. But that's a pretty good ERA.
Who's your manager?
Dusty.
I went Dusty, too. I went Dusty, too. Hinch has a few more wins. Hinch has a better regular season win percentage, but Dusty has more playoff wins in one less year, and he has a better playoff winning percentage.
And I can't get over the Will Harris, Greinke, Garrett Cole thing.
He had a major gaffe.
Yeah.
Yep.
He had a major gaffe.
Would you put AJ as the bench coach?
Sure.
He was never the bench coach.
Oh, I'm just saying. I mean, you could.
I guess the spotter would have to be the bench coach. Right?
I had a spotter as my bench coach. I had Mickey Brantley as my hitting coach,
who was never the hitting coach.
But he's better than anybody that was the hitting coach.
That's possibly true.
But Mickey Brantley was coaching Michael Brantley from the concourse.
But you said Michael Brantley did not do what we thought he did.
Which is what do you mean?
Because he was injured all the time.
He did have quite a bit of injuries. My batting order, too, if you want to go a step further. I like the feng shui of going righty-lefty, righty-lefty. And look, Dusty Baker's the manager, so he's probably doing this anyways. I went Springer, righty, Brantley, lefty, Altuve, righty, Yordan, lefty, Bregman, righty, Tucker, lefty, and then three straight righties, Correa, Yuli, Yiner. So Springer, Brantley, Altuve, Yordan, Bregman, Tucker, Correa, Yuli, Yiner.
I have no disagreement there.
That is one hell of a lineup.
All golden era Astros. That's so filthy. And the Astros have had this in a little over a decade.
I mean, they kind of had that almost the entire lineup in 2019.
I know.
Minus Yiner.
Tucker wasn't who he is, though.
True.
Like,
yeah.
People were always like, look at this. Tucker's batting eighth. Well, Kyle Tucker wasn't Kyle Tucker yet. He was baby Tuck. He wasn't quite there. And in fact, Hinch was even like splitting time with him and Reddick still.
And Yuli, for being like older, Yuli was so good when he was here.
He was good.
Man.
It's crazy the lack of – so left field's crazy outside of Brantley, right? And the lack of anybody at first base behind Yuli's crazy. Like, who's the second best first baseman in the golden era? Tyler White? The great white shark?
The great white.
I say that in jest, but
Who else played first?
Yuli did for all the years.
When it wasn't Yuli, yeah. It's like
Mancini was at first base for Game 7 of the World Series.
One half a year.
And he smothered that baseball.
Yeah.
He blanketed that baseball.
But to my point, people remember that.
I don't know who the second first baseman would be. It might be Christian Walker, sadly.
It might be switching someone else to first base that didn't normally play first
base.
They've
had nothing at first base.
Might be playing Marwin or Yiner there.
I was going to say, you could use Marwin as your backup first baseman.
Probably so. Yeah, I would say that would be the thing. No one had Greinke for his mound antics. We love Greinke, but Greinke doesn't make the list here. Morton Game 7 heroics versus the Dodgers forever earns him more cred than Javier. Okay, but how can you not mention the Javier no-hitter? Like, Javier also had amazing World Series heroics. Like, yes, I'm not disputing Morton's Game 7 heroics. Those absolutely exist. But how are you going to then ignore Christian Javier's no-hitter heroics in the World Series?
That's exactly right. That's what I was thinking, too. It's like, you know, you have so many guys that have their signature moment in this era. And because some of them, it was just a moment. But it's so unforgettable that people are going to put them at the top of their list.
Somebody said Chris Carter. That was before the Golden Era.
Yeah, he was a strikeout king, too.
I wouldn't include Chris Carter in the Golden Era. Brett Wallace, maybe he played a year. He might have been here in 15. I'd have to go back and look.
Didn't play much. And I was never a fan. because it. Oh man, when they got him, there was comparisons that he could be the next Berkman, or and he was terrible.
What?
Oh yeah,
I think you made that up.
I did not make that up.
Somebody said he would be the next Lance Berkman,
like Berkman-esque. Not like he's going to be the same stats, but that he could be the next version, like of a hitting. He's supposed to be a good hitter. He was never a good hitter here.
So, so Carter's last year in Houston was 15, and he did hit 24 homers that year, but he hit 199.
He was like boom or bust, right? Okay. Strikeout or home run.
That might be your second best first baseman, though. Like, if we're not moving positions, who are we talking? We're talking Chris Carter the 1 year where he had 24 home runs with a 199 average. We're talking Tyler White off the bench, which, I mean, that's almost comical. We're talking John Singleton off the bench, which is almost comical. We're talking about a washed-up Jose Abreu, who did have a decent second half of the first year of the contract. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about the first half of the year, Christian Walker, who's been bad.
I think Marwin would take Walker.
Marwin every now and then would play a little bit of first, but not a lot. Like, Marwin's probably the answer.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because the only guy that I can think of that I thought filled in at first base was Marwin, and it wasn't like it is now where, you know, you want to give guys until you got Christian Walker, but it was, you know, platoons and giving guys, you know, days off. But the only guy I can ever think of that was backup first baseman was Marwin.
Chris Devinsky vote. Because Devinsky was pretty close, actually, to making my team.
Oh, his walk was on the balls of his feet with that bounce, the way
he only had – what, one great year, though?
He had one great year, but he had a couple of years of like, solidness.
It was kind of similar. Like, Stanek had one elite year where his ERA was below two, but the rest were just kind of eh.
The thing with Devinsky is he was here for 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. So he was here for 5 years. So he started to add some stuff up. I mean, he was an all-star. He was an all-star in 17. He finished fourth in rookie of the year in 16. Like, he had a pretty good start in the golden era at the very beginning. Like, he's in consideration. Didn't ultimately make the team, but is in consideration.
And I think he had the Game of Thrones bobblehead.
Did he really?
Yeah, that people loved because he was a big Game of Thrones
fan. I think that was before I was into Game of Thrones. I didn't really like Game of Thrones. Yeah, I'm weird. Luke Scott was before the golden era. Mancini had the big moment. Preston Tucker was before the golden era. Cole got honorable mention. No, Cole's in the rotation. Greinke, somebody voted Greinke. Maldi over Yiner all day. Hashtag in Dusty we trusty. What if you erase the names and just look at stats, which pitchers make the list? Pretty much what I gave you. No Evan Gattis love. I just didn't love his defense behind the dish. Because you could include him at first base. Did he play much first base?
He played some.
I don't know how much.
I don't think he played it well.
Yeah, he was a butcher. Well.
No,
he was a butcher. It's a good way to put it.
They called him a caveman, right? And then he did the whole barehanded choke up a little bit on the bat. And
Joe Musgrove. Musgrove just didn't do enough to be in consideration here.
Yeah, he was never a full-time starter.
No, he was good, but he was obviously – like, what is your best memory of Joe Musgrove? That he was included in the Gerrit Cole trade? Like, mm-hmm. That's not to poo-poo on Joe Musgrove, but he's not worthy of this team. Like, we're deciding between Charlie Morton and Christian Javier. No offense, but Joe Musgrove is not in this conversation. He's just not. He's not. Now, he developed into being really, really good. Now, he's hurt right now, but he didn't do that in the golden era for the Houston Astros. Texter, Dusty was handed the keys to the Ferrari. Hinch built it. That's a fair point. I'm not going to argue that. Who do you all have on the trash can? Alex Cora.
That or Beltran.
Alex Cora is banging on the trash can.
Yeah, I was going to say Beltran.
Evan Gattis, 11 triples, one season. Cool. Where are you playing him? where is he going to be on this team? You're going to play him at your backup catcher? Do you
Would Cora be your bench coach over Espada?
No, I'm going to keep Espada because I like him more.
Okay.
I like him more. Plus, a bench coach doesn't do much. What does a bench coach do? Hey, how about this idea? I'm just with the manager. Like, what does a bench coach do? Like, he looks at the little spray charts. Hey, like, let's move the second baseman over 3 feet. Let's move him over 6 inches. And, in fact, I don't even think they do that. Like, Gary Pettis was always the guy standing on the top step. Pérez Chica's always the one moving the guys over.
Wasn't Espada known before Pérez Chica as the guy that worked with all the infielders and did the extra drill work and glove work and things?
Yeah, he was the infield guy.
Yeah.
When was Jason Castro out? Castro was here, like, in 15, and he came back as a pinch hitter late in the golden era. You could make a case for Castro over Maldonado. I just couldn't.
He was on the 22 team, wasn't he?
He came back.
Yeah.
I think
bad offensive catchers in the history.
He had a home run at Yankee Stadium, I think.
Don't forget about Fields. 22. He was the foundation we created. That's a good point. That's a really good point. Josh Fields got you back.
Oh, Josh Fields got Yordan, yeah.
Got back Yordan. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP, listener line, 713-780-3776. We had this conversation the other day about Hunter Brown and, like, how many pitchers in baseball would you trade Hunter Brown for? I think we landed, like, on one. Paul Skeens. Keith was giving me grief on Twitter the other day. Like, oh, look at Scooble. Look what he did. Yeah, but Hunter Brown has two more years of club control than Scooble. What about quarterback? What about Stroud? What quarterbacks in the NFL would you trade straight up for C.J. Stroud right now today? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I would never trade a basketball goal from one of those big box stores for a goal from Pro Dunk Hoops. No way. Those goals from Pro Dunk Hoops are way too good. Way too good. They make the highest quality basketball goals you'll ever find. Tempered glass backboard, breakaway rim, stainless steel hardware, height adjustable. It's rust proof, which is must have in Houston. And mention that being able to adjust the height anywhere from 5 to 10 feet. Their goal 4, you can actually raise and lower the goals with a drill. Lightning adjust feature, and it's unbelievable what they can do with this thing. 5 to 10 feet in a matter of seconds. You can get anywhere in that window, 5 to 10 feet in seconds with the lightning adjust feature. It's fun to do, and it's easy to do. Their accessories, they're next level. LED light kits for night play. It's hot during the day. You're at work. You only want to play at night. I get you. I understand. Get LED light kits. That way you can play at night. Backstop nets. You can make. You don't have to worry about chasing the basketball around. Also, pull pad lettering. You can customize your goal. You can order all of this online at ProDunk.com, by the way. And you can also order professional installation online. You can't screw it up. If the pros from ProDunk are doing it, they're going to install your goal at the perfect height, perfectly straight. You don't do it. Let the pros at ProDunk do that work for you. Give them a call at 281-351-9822. 281-351-9822. And visit ProDunk.com. That's ProDunk.com.
Listen to ESPN 97.5 in HD. 97.9 HD2. 5. Lance, weekday mornings from 7 to 10.
I don't even think it's arguable.
Okay,
they're
what happens
better
when
this
not?
Year,
what
a better team without Kyle Tucker.
Why?
And Alex Bregman.
Why is that?
Because they're winning more games with fewer pitchers than they had
fewer
last year.
Fewer runs scored, yeah, because Fromber and Hunter Brown have been incredible.
Well, they were incredible last year, too.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Just a couple of Hall of Famers arguing why the Astros are better this year than last year. Well, they've won more games. How could you? I mean, that's the trump card, I think.
Facts.
They won more. How are the Astros better this year than they were last year? They've won more games. That's the goal, right? Every time you lace them up, every time you go play nine innings, sometimes more. Isn't the goal to win the game?
Sounds like a Clyde Drexler.
Yeah, I mean, I actually, I'm not mocking it. I actually agree. Like, I agree with John. Like, I do think that the Astros are better this year than last year, even without Bregman, without
because they've won more games.
Yeah. Because they won more games. Like, they are a better team.
I just remember the one we used to do keys to the game every night and didn't know if Clyde was going to do them. And the one night Clyde was just like, I just think, you know, we got to start with score more points. It's like, yeah,
that's
that would help. Yeah,
that's way worse.
That would help.
What's the key to the game? We got to score more runs than the Rockies. We got to score more
low
runs.
Low key, I hate when TV broadcasts do the keys to the game.
I don't disagree.
Because it's always so generic. Like in football, it's turn the ball over less, control the clock, establish the line of scrimmage. It's like it's the same five things.
TV?
Make your free throws.
Yeah, make free throws. Shoot a good percentage from three. Don't turn the ball over.
You know how I feel. I hate doing preview radio. Preview radio is awful. Like, what do the Astros need to do tonight against Chase Dollander to win? What do they have to do every night to win?
Score runs.
They have to score runs. They have to see
ball,
pitches. They
ball,
have to get on base.
Runs.
I hate preview radio. I cannot stand it. It's why I much rather do a Monday show than a Friday show every single day. Like, preview radio is awful. It is awful. But TV segments are usually very, very, like, cookie cutter. They're very surface level, as you know. Like, look at the Astros pregame show, right? And this isn't a knock on them. This is all TV. But just using that as an example because that's what we watch. Like, they normally start 30 minutes before the game, right?
Right.
They'll do, like, what do you think of last night? Okay, there's one segment. What do you think of tonight? There's another segment.
Interview.
Might have an interview. Mm-hmm. Done. Okay, now it's 7 o'clock. Now it's time to go to the game. They don't start at 7. They start at 7:10. I think they have two segments between 7 and first pitch. It's usually a welcome to the booth scene setter. Here's the scene that we're setting for you. And then toss it down to Julia. And then first pitch. Like, it's very, very surface level TV. And, like, this isn't just the Shin. This is every Major League Baseball broadcast. This is every NBA broadcast. This is every NFL broadcast. That's just the way pregame shows are.
It is. In basketball is the same way. It's review the last game, preview the next game, interview with the coach, sideline reporter update on last-minute details going on within the game, introduce your guys that are going to be calling the game and give them keys to the game, whatever, and you're ready to go.
Yeah, so it's usually pretty surface level. But I do agree with John's take that the Astros are better. Like, I think they are better this year. Like, I don't really understand the argument, maybe. Like,
I think from a – you can look at it from, like, a career standpoint of back of the baseball card and the possibility – you know, and just –
you know, the back of his baseball card.
The talent of each individual player.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, you can't argue with the results. I mean, you know, especially last year when they struggled and were scuffling most of the year just to get back into the playoff picture. And this year, they comfortably lead the division.
Like, I understand where Lance is coming from. Like, how are they better without Kyle Tucker and Alex Bregman, right? And you still have kind of the same cast of characters in the pitching staff. Well, the pitching staff's just been way better. The pitching staff's been one of the best pitchers in baseball, period. Remember last year they got off to such a bad start from a pitching perspective.
Some bullpen like top three and starters are like top ERA.
And last year they had the worst ERA in baseball for like the first 2 months because they had like 30 different pitchers they were used. So like pitching consistency would be the first thing that I look at. But it also proves the point that you don't need – like, star power helps, but it's not the end-all, be-all in baseball. It's more about being a complete team, don't have holes in the lineup, be as deep as you possibly can. You don't need these mega – look at Mike Trout. Like, Mike Trout's never won anything. He's been the best player in baseball for 15 years.
Well, and you look at – to your point, look at the guys that have stepped up this year. I mean, Peña elevated his game. You weren't expecting that to that level. Jake, the same thing, elevated their game. You weren't expecting that level. And in the process, you had a more complete lineup, no matter how much – Christian Walker hasn't yet been who you thought he was going to be, or Yiner got off to a slow start, or Yordan hasn't even played. The fact is that the guys playing for him, Paredes, has been huge for them. Everybody, there's so many other guys have stepped up that even the guys that aren't like what your expectations were are good enough when those other guys take it to another level. And that just shows you when you have the continuity of a complete lineup as opposed to a couple of big booming bats, it makes a huge difference.
So no Peña tonight. Astros lineup's out. Peña on the IL, of course. Who do you want to be the leadoff hitter while Peña's gone?
Paredes.
Okay. In a spot, I'm with you. And Espada's with us. Isak is the leadoff guy, which, I mean, we had two games. Yeah, he pretty much same lineup that we saw. Like, we had a two-game sample of what Espada was going to do. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect Espada to do something different today than he did Saturday or Sunday. Like, some people were like, oh, he's on the IL now. He's going to be gone for at least 2-3 weeks. Maybe Espada changes it up. Like, I didn't expect that, and he didn't.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it with the fact that you won 5 of 6 against 2 first-place teams and you've been rolling. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Just roll with what's working right now until it doesn't work, and then you can tinker.
The first lineup post Jeremy Peña on the IL: Isak, Myers, Altuve at second, which is fine with Colton Gordon. Smith, your cleanup man, Killikam, Israel, very happy about that. Caratini's your DH, Yiner catches, and then Walker, Hummel in left, Dubon is your shortstop. So that's the Astros 9 first game post Peña.
I just hope Colton Gordon has his A game.
Yeah, maybe he might not. It's in Colorado. It's in the Rockies. Chase Dolander, your Tennessee Volunteer guy. The 2-8, 6.06 ERA. The Rockies are 19-65 on the year. That is atrocious.
And that's so much better than they were under Bud Black.
Good point.
Which is scary, right?
They really are.
Springer, they start off like 8-50, so that's kind of a hot run for them.
Remember, they were struggling. They were, when are they going to get to 10 wins?
Astros infamously play down to their competition.
They
do. Like, I'm expecting this to be a tight series.
we talked about it before we came on the air. I'm like, yeah, you're supposed to hammer a team as bad as the Rockies. That means it's going to be competitive.
I can almost predict this week because the Astros have 3 in Coors, 3 in L.A. They're going to drop 2 of 3 against the Rockies. Everybody's going to be like, oh, sky's falling down. They can't win without Peña. This team's not a true contender. They're fake. They're not real. I told you. And then they're going to go L.A. and take 2 of 3. I can almost predict this week.
I think they're going to take 2 out of 3 in Colorado.
I'm just saying.
I hope they do it.
I remember,
either way with a 3-3 road trip.
Yeah, I'd be okay with that.
That's
without
fine.
Peña, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
without Yordan, yeah, I would take a 3-3 road trip. Absolutely, I would take a 3-3 road trip. Even though you play the lowly Rockies and Mile High, even though you play, yeah, I'll take a 3-3 roadie
in LA. I'd just like to shut up Keith from LA and win that series.
Yeah, I really don't even care. Remember when the Astros a couple of years ago, like they were in that race with Seattle, and it was like, let's make T-Mobile, you know, have a reputation dog. And then the Astros, was it a four-game series? I don't remember if it was
You mean right out of the All-Star break? I think it was a three-game series.
I can't remember the length. And they swept them.
That was their that was their World Series.
Yes, and everybody's like, oh, reputation dog. And that's when like Seattle Pierre was like, you know, doxing me and putting my address on the internet. And then they went into Oakland, the Astros did, and got swept.
Yep.
Like, that's what the Astros do. So if the Astros lose this series, don't freak out. Also, George Springer hit a grand slam against the Yankees. He has a double dong game on Canada Day for the Blue Jays. They're beating the Yankees 9-4, in case you cared.
The Yankees are really quietly kind of falling back in team. Toronto's right there. The Rays are right there.
They're catching them. George Springer, an Astro at heart. Double dong day against the Yankees as he tries to keep the Yankees away from the Astros for the second spot in the American League. All right, I hijacked that segment. Where does C.J. Stroud? How many quarterbacks in the NFL would you trade C.J. Stroud for right now today?
Stroud!
Thank you, Gruden. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.